Minerva Radio. Less mainstream, more music.
Greetings. It's Brock and Roll time again with me, Mike Brocken, here on MineraRadio.uk, brought to you courtesy of Caldy Media. For this edition, we're continuing our look at important post-war record labels, those labels that effectively championed the underground in folk and rock scenes, all that kind of area, and in the process brought this music to the fore in what became a kind of a largely album-orientated marketplace. This time out, it's US label Elektra, started out by Jack Holtzman in 1950, when I thought, 1950, that seems early, but of course the folk scene was really going strong at that stage as well in the United States. And he describes it as a damn fool notion, he said. It couldn't have been any crazier, he also said. And Elektra never really broke through the domination of the major US labels, but instead, they kind of evolved alongside them, really, taking chances, creating alternative music choices for a growing number of young people who preferred non-mainstream diets of popular music, specialism, like we do here on Minerva Radio. So let's kick off with one such choice. Eclections moniker was in keeping with their diverse origins. Two Australians, Trevor Lucas, Kerrilee Mayall, one Canadian, Michael Rosen, one Norwegian, George Hultgren, and an Englishman, Jerry Conway. They sounded like this.
Thank you.
like that. That's Eclection. And the amazing Violet Dew from the one eponymous album for Elektra from 1968. They carried on a little bit after that. After the release, great American African-American folk blues singer Doris Henderson, who was based over here for a while, she replaced Kerry Mayle. And Doris worked with John Renborn, actually, before John joined Pentangle. But only one single emerged on Elektra, and it's quite rare these days as well. It was a cover of the US Kaleidoscope's Please Mark II. Really, really good stuff. They split in 69, though, with Trevor Lucas going on to form Fotheringay, of course, with Sandy Denny, and George Hultgren eventually forming the mid-70s pop band Sailor, believe it or not. He went into that. OK, next up, a single offering from Elektra from late 65, so going back 2 or 3 years. Elektra dabbled with folk rock material following the success of The Byrds and the subsequent boom that came about in Bob Dylan covers. All over the place they were for a long time, really. And in this case, the latter case, they persuaded Judy Collins to record Bob Dylan's I'll Keep It With Mine in late 65. On paper, at least, this was something of a hot item, really. Firstly, an unreleased song by folk rock's kind of chief songwriter at the time. Secondly, Al Cooper was on organ as well. And the third thing, one that the future Dylan biographer Robert Shelton declared, was a single of the best folk rock performance yet recorded. But it absolutely stiffed. I love it, though. So here's Judy Collins, and I'll Keep It With Mine.
You will search, babe, at any cost, but how long, babe, can you search for what's not lost? Everybody will help you. Some people are very kind, but if I can save you anytime, you might think I'm odd if I say I'm loving you not for what you are, but for what you're not.
That's from late 1965. I don't know if you've heard that before. It doesn't get played much at all, really. Cracking lost Elektra single, Judy Collins' I'll Keep It With Mine, Bob Dylan song. I think one of the reasons why not many people have heard it is that Collins absolutely hated it. She hated it and hated the arrangement as well. And she later told Richie Unterberger, that great writer about folk rock in America, that she said, it's not a very good song, certainly not a Dylan song that lives up to its name, she said. It doesn't really go anywhere. I just think it does. I love it, absolutely love it. And her vocal treatment is just brilliant. So there we are, a real great mixed opinions about that one. Another rarity now, and this is even rarer actually from the Electra stable, from a band that recorded, well, sort of quite a bit of material for Electra during the first half of 1970. And the band's name were the Stalk Forest Group. That's S-T-A-L-K dash Forest with two T's. Two R's, I beg your pardon. And they played a kind of psychedelic folk rock that fitted well with the label's roster, hence that's why they were signed. And legendary rock critic Richard Meltzer was a friend of the band, and he contributed lyrics to them, as did fellow rock journalist Sandy Pearlman. And Sandy Pearlman also managed the group. This next track was one side of only a promo single, 300 copies pressed, and it's really rare as a consequence of that. And as for the group, well, they evolved, in my opinion, and this is just my opinion, into a just seriously underrated great rock band, the Blue Oyster Cult. I'm a big fan of the Blue Oyster Cult. So see if you can recognise them in the Stalk Forest Group's What Is Quicksand? Real Electra rarity too there. That's from the Proto Blue Oyster Cult, the Stalk Forest Group. And only a demo, What Is Quicksand? I love that. I love the Blue Oyster Cult, so I'm really biased in that respect. Okay, next up, one from an album I picked up in a second-hand book and record shop in Chicago some years ago, all because it contained a song which I'd first heard covered by one of my favourite groups of all time, really, Quicksilver Messenger Service. Many years previously, they'd recorded Pride of Man, previous to the time I picked up the album. Anyway, Pride of Man was written by Bob Camp, who was born in the UK but was evacuated during the war. And as a young man, he started attracting attention on the US folk scene with a partnership with the famous American folkie Bob Gibson. Then he changed his name to Hamilton. He had some kind of illuminative sort of moment. He changed his name to Hamilton, recorded an album, Paths of Victory, for Elektra. The album contained 7 Dylan covers, and some of them are okay, but also his own version of Pride of Man. And now, it's an interesting one. He kind of traded the song with another travelling folkie by the name of Dino Valenti. Dino gave him a song to actually perform, the soon-to-be hippie anthem of the late 60s, Get Together. I always love the Youngbloods version of that. I don't know if you know that song, but check it out, it's great. Whereas Camp let Dino use Pride of Man. Valenti then went west, formed Quicksilver Messenger Service, and the song was included on their fantastic first album. However, and it's a big however, of course, Dino wasn't on the album at all because he'd been busted and he was in prison at the time. So anyway, see what you think of this original Elektra version of the song Pride of Man as recorded by the writer Hamilton Camp.
Turn around, go back down, back the way you came. Can't you see that flash of fire, 10 times brighter than the day? And behold, a mighty city broken in the dust again. Oh God, the pride of man broken in the dust again. Turn around, go back down, back the way you came. Babylon is laid to waste, Egypt's buried in her shame. Their mighty men are beaten down, their kings have fallen in the ways. Oh God, the pride of man broken in the dust again. Turn around, go back down, back the way you came. Terror is on every side, lo, the leaders are dismayed. Those who put their faith in fire their faith shall be repaid. Oh God, the pride of man broken in the dust again. Turn around, go back down, back the way you came. Shout a warning to the nations that the sword of God is raised against Babylon, that mighty city, rich in treasure, wide in fame. It shall cause thy tower to fall and make of thee a pyre of flame. Oh, thou that dwell on many waters, rich in treasure, wide in fame, that bow unto a god of gold, thy pride of might shall be thy shame. Oh, God, the pride of man broken in the dust again. And only God can lead the people back into the earth again. Thy holy mountain be restored, and mercy on thy people, Lord.
There we are, Hamilton Camp, American folk singer, actually British by birth, and Pride of Man, a really, really well travelled song across America, you know, different people singing it at different times. What Quicksilver Messenger Service did to it really was electrify it, and then they kind of stretch it out and add a riff, and it becomes, you know, this great electric piece of folk rock. Okay, next up, which is really interesting stuff, to contrast, let us say, with what you've just heard, what I think is an Elektra masterpiece from the pen of Arthur Lee. Arthur Lee, of course, is the leader of the LA group Love, the label's first move into the rock territory. It was the first rock band they signed, really. And it's perhaps not one you might expect to hear, because it's from Love's 1969 album, For Sale. That's F-O-U-R and S-A-I-L. A great album, much underrated record. But I suppose coming after Forever Changes, it could only pale by comparison for many people. The song August was apparently a one-take effort and the first song that the new Love assemblage worked around in August 68, you know, to see how they sounded, so to speak. So perhaps, you know, the title is based on that. Anyway, I just love it. and see what you think of Love's August.
Thank you.
August, My Love, from their follow-up album to Forever Changes, For Sale. Some truly memorable moments on that album, such as August, I think. And some other great Arthur Lee belters. There's one called Always See Your Face, which I just think is a great song. Sublime talent, Arthur Lee. Really difficult guy, really, but he left us in 2006, not long actually after I saw him play the entire Forever Changes with a new love band at Mountford Hall at Liverpool University. It's just great. Were you there? You probably were. We all loved it, didn't we? Okay, next up, something from a singer-guitarist who I've admired since his days in Adrian Henry's Liverpool scene group, Andy Roberts. By the time he'd formed a group called Plainsong with Ian Matthews, the group was expected to do great things, really, and they were signed to a deal by Elektra. But they remained something of a neglected band by the label. You know, one of those things where you sign and you expect something to happen and nothing really happens for a while, that usual scenario. But, you know, they were always, I suppose, falling out with each other. That didn't help. Oh, about one thing or another. And at the same time, Matthews was also being persuaded to lead the group for a solo career in Los Angeles, which he did do that. So it was a complete mess, really. But this song of Roberts that's coming up now, I think is sublime. In fact, it dates from his Liverpool scene days, apparently. But he then recorded it with Plainsong, and then it was scheduled for their second but unreleased album. So it ended up on Roberts' solo Urban Cowboy LP, which is quite difficult to get these days, came out on Elektra. And that was before he left the label as well. So he was around enough to kind of promote it a little bit. See what you think of this one. This is Andy Roberts and All Around My Grandmother's Floor.
Yesterday, I know it was her, 'cause I saw her today. She looked like the pictures in books that I saw.
From Andy Roberts there, from the Urban Cowboy album released on Elektra, mid-70s, mid to late 70s. and That's All Around My Grandmother's Floor, which was originally intended to be a plain song thing, but, you know, I mean, there's a lot written about plain song, isn't there, if you were to find some good comments about them. Really interesting, but very frustrating experience for everybody involved, it sounds like. Okay, Judy Henske. And she'd worked in the folk scene during the early 1960s, but she wasn't strictly speaking a folkie at all, really. Yeah, not being restricted by musical boundaries, Henske actually did record two what you might describe as folk albums for Elektra. And the song High Flying Bird from the album of the same name, I think, really anticipated folk rock because it has a kit drum on it. There's an electric guitar on it as well. And her vocal tone is really interesting as well in that respect. The song was later picked up by Richie Havens and it became part of his repertoire. And it was also given the full treatment by Jefferson Airplane at the Monterey Pop Festival in 67. A great, great version of High Flying Bird. Anyway, see what you think of this, which is technically the original, really, from 1964. Judy Henske and High Flying Bird.
And there's a high flying bird way up in the sky, and I wonder, does he look down as he flies on by? Oh, he's riding on the air so easy in the sky. But Lord, look at me here. Oh, I'm rooted like a tree here. I got the sit down, can't cry. Oh Lord, I'm gonna die blues. Now the sun comes along, oh Lord, it lights up the day. And when he gets tired, he slides on over the way. Oh, it's east to the west, he gets gone every day. But Lord, look at me here. Oh, I'm rooted like a tree here. Oh, I got the sit down, can't cry. Oh, Lord, I'm gonna die blue. Now, I had a man, and he lived in a mine. Now, he never saw the sun, but Lord, he never stopped trying. Then one day, my man up and died. I said, my man up and died. Oh, yeah, my man up and died. When he wanted to fly, and the only way to fly was to die. There's a high flying bird way up in the sky, and I wonder, does he look down as he flies on by, riding on the air so easy in the sky. But Lord, look at me. Well, I'm rooted like a tree here. I got the sit down, can't cry. Oh Lord, I'm gonna die blue. Oh Lord, I'm gonna die blue. Oh Lord, I'm gonna die.
Yeah, that's great. Judy Henske, that. And that's High Flying Bird, the original version, I think. But it was written by a guy called Billy Ed Wheeler, who wasn't a folkie, as far as I'm concerned. And actually, it's not really a folk song either, is it really? So it kind of floats. It's one of those great songs that moves and changes and gets covered over and over again by a lot of bands into the mid-1960s. Very interesting song generally, really. It works well for me anyway, I must be honest. Good stuff there. Okay, time now for a bit of The Doors, I think. One of Elektra's greatest selling groups in many respects, especially in the USA. But despite their success in America, actually, by 68, The Doors weren't really internationally known, at least beyond their cult following, really. In fact, as a young musician, musician and music fan myself in the late 60s, I recall detecting quite a bit of cynicism as to whether they were a kind of a legit band or not, you know. You know, that kind of authenticity stuff. But I loved them. And actually, by the time Waiting for the Sun, the Waiting for the Sun album comes out, that became their first success in the UK album charts. And actually from the album, Hello, I Love You became their only hit single over here, at least only one during the band's lifetime. Of course, they did have a couple of hits after Jim Morrison died. The band came over for dates that September of 68. And you might remember, if you're old enough like me, the TV documentary called The Doors Are Open. And that way, that was broadcast in our area by Granada. And that fueled the myth of the band, and it kind of increased their following exponentially, really. And Waiting for the Sun was, in fact, the first album The Doors that I purchased. I remember buying it secondhand from a friend who was a bit skint. So, you know, it was one of those things, well, I'll buy that off you. And I think I still have it. I think I still have the same album. It might have been actually possibly, maybe it was a mono album. We wanted to get a stereo version. Anyway, whatever. Here's a cracker from the album, 5 to 1.
Yeah, come on. Love my girl. She looking good. Come on. One more. 5 to 1, baby. 1 in 5. No one here gets out of.
Come on.
stuff there. Could only be the Doors, couldn't it? Classic Doors, 5-1 from the Waiting for the Sun album. Classic electro release as well, really. Yeah, anyway, let's carry on. I'm just settling on my fandom of the Doors there for a microsecond. You'll have to excuse that. Let's have a bit of blues now, some really mean blues now from the Paul Butterfield Blues Band, who by the time they signed to Elektra, had just about seen it all in the Chicago bars. You know, Butterfield was a great, great band leader, and they were in demand right across the Chicago area, really. And he put together a series of fantastic groups. But that first band was very special. Mike Bloomfield and Elvin Bishop on twin lead guitars. Mark Naftalin, keyboard player. And that heavy-duty rhythm section they had of Sam Lay and Jerome Arnold. Just perfect, absolutely perfect for a blues band. And the Butterfield Band was one of Paul Rothschild's first signings for the label and was a good pointer, really, to Elektra's future, if you think about it, kind of moving away just slightly from folk music and towards contemporary electric music. Their first album was eventually released, so a few problems with it, but it was eventually released in 65, as a consequence of Elektra's direction, starting to change. And then they, in turn, further changed the direction of the label, if you see what I mean. It's a very, very significant release. And if you think about it coming out in 65, you know, this is a period of time when the Stones had gone over. You know, a lot of the British invasion bands were doing very, very well. But the Paul Butterfield Blues Band, you know, came back with something like this. Take a listen to Blues With a Feeling.
Yourself. with someone else.
Paul Butterfield Blues Band from their very first album, the eponymous Paul Butterfield Blues Band, and that's Blues With A Feeling. I love the Paul Butterfield Blues Band. Really, really good. And their album East West is something of a psychedelic blues masterpiece as well. Actually, you know, if you went through the blues, the catalogue of the blues band, you know, you find that there's all sorts of different types of blues that Butterfield's interested in. There's a later album called The Legend of Pig Boy Crabshaw, which is a good one. And that's got brass in it and really interesting stuff there as well. The kind of material being abandoned somewhat by Elektra by 65 is probably best exemplified by this next selection, in actual fact. Also released that year, same year as the Butterfield Band, but somewhat overshadowed, really, by guitar electricity, whether they be from the Zombies or the Rolling Stones or even the Dave Clark Five in 65 in the US. Two young women who are fans of Joan Baez had met while they were at school in Vista, California, and started singing. And they were Carol McComb and Kathy LaRiche. And they did traditional songs, but perhaps with more kind of less traditional harmonies, more like the kind of thing you'd hear the Shangri-Las or the Ronettes singing, in actual fact. And the aforementioned Paul Rothschild produced their album as well as the Butterfield one. And their album is Kathy and Carol. And it was highly regarded, but wasn't a big seller. And Rothschild was then arrested after this particular time, and a second album never materialised. So have a listen to this. This is Kathy and Carol from 65 and their take on the traditional green, rocky road.
Little Miss Molly, your name's been called. Take the chair by the wall. Kiss her once and let her go. Ain't gonna sit in that chair no more. Green, green, rocky road, Providentian green. Tell me who you love, tell me who you
Kathy and Carol, who were another really highly recommended artists on Elektra, but they were singing and performing at the same time as the louder music was coming in, you know, the rock and roll, as the Americans say. We called it, and eventually called it rock, didn't we? And so Cathy and Carol's careers just sort of disappeared overnight, really. And the producer was unavailable, it must be said, but had also been working with Paul Butterfield at that time. Green Rocky Road from Cathy and Carol. Speaking of oddities and stuff, I mentioned Dino Valenti before when discussing Hamilton Camp's Pride of Man, so I thought we might listen to an odd little thing from Dino, which was released by Elektra as a single in 1964, the year previously. I think that Dino was or is ridiculously underrated. I also think that his solo album for CBS, recorded in 1968, is, I honestly believe it's something of a lost classic, and I also don't think that his work with Quicksilver Messenger Service was as bad as some people claim. I really like a lot of it, really. Anyway, Jim Dixon, the man behind the formation of the Byrds, produced Valenti's 64 single for Elektra, and it was entitled Byrdses. That's a plural of birds, isn't it? See, some kind of comedy thing there. And that, according to Roger McGuinn of the Byrds, suggested the name Byrds for their new group. And of course, the Y, you know, in Byrds, the group replaced the I in Byrdses, etc. And the rest is history. The Byrds with a Y started recording Mr. Tambourine Man album in January 65. And it wasn't really expected to work out for them at the time. And Dino and Roger did, in fact, discuss becoming a duo. But of course, once Tambourine Man took off, that was it. No duo, etc. So it's an odd little thing, this. So have a little listen to Byrdses by Dino Valenti, a single on Elektra from late 64.
Theirs is a pretty house. Theirs is in a pear tree full of pears, and 'cause they're birds, you see, and they live in a tree, and they never need ladders or any stairs. Theirs is a pretty house, theirs is, and they never have no troubles or cares, and pears are free to birds, you see. So they never have to run away from bears. Theirs is a little house, theirs is, with little chairs. Did you ever see a house as free around here or any other way?
Gosh, that's a rarity, isn't it? Elektra single from Dino Valenti in late 64 called Byrdses. I don't suppose it sold hardly at all. It might have done a little bit around Los Angeles and, you know, California generally, really. But Dino Valenti's Byrdses, apparently, at least according to Roger McGuinn, was an influence on the Byrds selecting their name Byrds, but with a Y. Okay, almost time to go, really. So let's go out on a later Elektra track, this time from 1973, so a bit later, and actually one of Jack Holtzman's last signings. By 73, The founder, as we mentioned before, Jack Holtzman, was ready to leave Elektra. And he started creating interest from a group of people called Kinney. Do you remember the Kinney group? Which eventually became WEA, which stood for Warner Elektra Atlantic. So they bought up, holding company originally in electronics, and they bought up these very, very significant labels by the early 70s. Warner Brothers had all sorts of bands and artists like James Taylor with them, didn't they? Elektra, of course, their back catalogue was probably worth a fortune, never mind latest releases. And Atlantic was Armut Ertegun's great label, which was a soul label, you know, in the 1960s, R&B in the 1950s, but then had signed Led Zeppelin, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It was worth a lot of money, a lot of money. And the deal was about to be struck in 73. But Jack Holtzman's last hurrah at Elektra was signing Queen for US release and distribution. EMI over here, but Queen in Elektra. And it might have appeared an unlikely signing for him, but their self-titled first album, Queen, is regarded now as probably one of the most underrated hard rock debuts of the decade, really. And I'd agree with that. They were very hard rock at the time. I remember seeing them at the Liverpool Stadium, I think it was anyway, and they could really motor. You know, they were a good hard rock band at that stage. And at the time as well, however, critics were very unkind to the band, as far as I can remember. But that first record definitely laid the groundwork for consistency, I think. So I'll see you soon. And here's a bit of Queen from their first album, which was released on Elektra in 1973. Big hit record as well. Keep yourself alive.
Better every day.
No, I just think I'll do just nearer to my grave.